Hey, this is Nate, and you're listening to Most Wanted.
We are cutting in from the editing booth to make a couple of corrections from episode 62 and episode 63.
To start off in episode 62, The Murder of Lauren McCluskey, Amanda tells us that Lauren belonged to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and then I asked if she was Mormon. And then we both admitted we didn't actually know if Mormons were Christians, so we gave it a Google.
According to Google, the Church of Latter-day Saints, or the LDS Church, is the fourth largest church in the United States and the fastest growing. The Saints, or Mormons, as they are referred to by the church outsiders, assert that they are Christian as they believe in the Jesus Christ of the Bible.
Mormons do not believe in the traditional Christian concept of the Trinity. According to the Mormon beliefs, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost are seen as separate and distinct gods. This differs from mainstream Christianity, which teaches that these three entities are one God in three persons. So that's basically clear as mud, is it not?
Yeah, I do also know that they, aside from the Bible, they also have the Book of Mormon.
Yes, yep.
I don't know what's in it. I just know that they have it.
Right, so. Right. It's weird
I know,
that...
I know you haven't seen the musical. I haven't either.
No. And it's weird that Unplanned, we're talking about these like in two totally separate stories, but they're right. They're back to back. We've been doing kind of...
I know. It's been serendipitous like that. Okay. And second, we would like to address episode 63, Jodi Arias, part one.
I said in part one of Jodi Arias that Travis didn't go to college and instead he went on mission trips. But then later in the episode, you mentioned that Mormons go on their missions and do missionary work. Well, I panicked that I maybe confused them after and then I went back and looked and I saw in a source that it says, quote, Travis went on to serve a mission in Denver from 96 to 98. So you were correct. That was his mission. He did not go on a traditional quote-unquote mission trip like you and I went on growing up.
Right, yeah, where it was like a week long.
Right, and we did them every summer.
Yeah, this sounds accurate for Mormons. It's usually a 2 to 3 year mission.
Right.
And that's why many of them, I shouldn't even say most, many of them end up speaking a second language or a third language because they go to often other countries or other areas where they learn a language by being immersed.
Oh, that's really cool. But I did not know that. So those are our corrections. Thank you so much and enjoy our part two of Jodi Arias. Hi, Sissy.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Most Wanted. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Amanda.
How you doing this week, sis?
Doing pretty well. Not a lot is new. It's been kind of nice out.
I have to applaud you. This has been twice now that you have not brought up the weather in our opening, and I'm very happy.
But I just did.
I know.
I enjoy being outside. I'm sorry.
Well, you run.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that has something to do with it.
Yeah. And we have these big windows in our apartment that
you oh, my gosh. Those. They're beautiful.
And Miss Macy and I like to lay in the sun during the day when we can. So, like, I, like, have my laptop for work, like, propped on my stomach, and we're both, like, basking in the sun in our living room.
And your other dog is... Poor Ellie's probably like, it's so fucking hot in here.
Yeah, she's in the room because she can't be away from us, but she's like in the shade by the kitchen, like, yeah. You guys,
I hate it here. Yeah. All right, Sissy, are you ready to get into part two of Jodi Arias?
You know, I'm very conflicted because I want to know the ending, but this story sucks.
Yeah, she's a monster.
Yeah, so yes and no.
Okay, perfect. I do have to start with some trigger warnings again that I don't think I mentioned in the last episode because they weren't in the last episode. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Of course, murder. There's mentions of abuse, mention of child sexual abuse, and mentions of suicide.
Okay.
I'm pointing them all out, but she's a lying liar who lies. Absolutely. Just so that everyone is aware.
Yep.
So this week, articles include ABC News, All That's Interesting, Biography.com, Investigation Discovery, and Wikipedia. Do you want to give a recap of last week's episode, or would you like me to do it?
Oh, I can try.
Okay.
So we met Jodi.
Mm-hmm.
She grew up in California.
Mm-hmm.
She joined an MLM.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she met Travis, who also Was he also growing up in California? He did. He was, wasn't he?
Yes, and he was born in Riverside and then moved to
Utah, right?
Arizona.
Oh, he was Mormon in Arizona, not in Utah?
Correct.
Okay, so he's Mormon.
Yes.
In Arizona.
Yes.
And, yep, so they met at their MLM that they worked at together, and Jody was like, I know that you and God want you to wait to have sex until you're married, but I don't want to do that, so let's not. And Travis is like, yes, okay.
Yes.
And, and then he eventually told her, I like you for being my lover in the nighttime, but I don't want to marry you because you're my lover in the nighttime. I need a pure woman to marry me. So
he actually did not tell her that.
Oh, that's what he was
thinking. But we know that.
Okay. Yes. So that was what he was thinking. He didn't tell her that, but they broke up.
Yep.
And then she moved to Arizona and was basically stalking him.
Yep.
And then he had a new girlfriend, but she was like seeing him on the side, little side chick. And then she killed him. And then I think we left off when she was being interrogated.
Yeah. She had just been arrested.
And doing headstands.
Yes, yes.
And other weird yoga.
Yeah, she did like some kind of backbend in her chair where basically it's just a lot of
talking to herself.
She sang. Oh, Silent Night.
She sang. That's right. Okay. So did I miss anything?
Honestly, no. I like your recap better than what I pointed out, but I guess to snowball off of that. Jody Arias has been charged with the murder of Travis Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
Travis was found stabbed 27 times and shot in the head in his Mesa, Arizona home. At the scene, detectives found evidence of a bloody handprint, a 25 caliber shell casing, dark strands of hair, and a camera with photos of Jody and Travis together on the afternoon of June 4th, 2008.
I did forget about the handprint and the camera. Those were pretty big things. So thank you for that reminder.
Mm-hmm. After comparing the DNA at the scene to the samples that Jody offered them, because remember, she went in and gave them to them.
That's right. Yep. Because she thought that she was smarter than them.
Correct. Well, they were found to be a match to her.
Naturally.
And finally, after some weird interrogation room shenanigans. Headstands. Thank you. Yes. Jody was ready to tell the truth. And the truth is that two masked intruders had broken into Travis's home and killed him while letting Jody go unharmed.
But the actual truth is that she's a lying liar who lies.
Lying liar who lies, absolutely.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Okay, so this is the story that Jody was going to stick to for some time. In September 2008, Jody spoke to Inside Edition while in jail awaiting trial.
Why would you do that?
Because she literally thinks she's smarter than everyone.
And she's clearly not.
Yeah. I only watched the Inside Edition, like a flashback, and it was like women's jailhouse confessions or whatever. So I didn't actually watch this whole interview, but it was just like a highlight of the key points. So she gives this interview, and honestly, it's kind of wild because she's kind of like laughing and pretty flippant about the fact that she's in jail for murder.
What the hell?
Yeah, it's weird to watch. Also, I have no idea who this interviewer is. I tried Googling it. Can't figure out who she was talking to.
Okay.
So I apologize to Mr. Inside Edition.
Okay.
So the clip starts and the narrator starts. The trial of Jody Arias gripped the nation as she was charged with the murder of her boyfriend, Travis Alexander, in June 2000.
Thank you.
That may have been a typo on my end. I don't remember.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure they were trying to sensationalize it more.
Okay. I was going to say that actually might have been a typo. Okay. But yes. Yeah. They were absolutely trying to sensationalize it. It's pretty fucking gross.
Ugh, yeah.
So she spoke to Inside Edition to make a case of her innocence that she did not kill her 31-year-old boyfriend. She says in this interview, "No jury can convict me. I am innocent. And you can mark my words on that."
Oh, boy.
She said that the two people with masks broke into the home and attacked them. She told Inside Edition she managed to get away, but Travis was killed.
That doesn't make any sense, Jody.
I'm not proud of the fact that I just left my friend there to be slaughtered at the hands of two other people, she said.
My friend.
She claimed that she was too terrified to call the police the night of the attack.
No.
And again claimed she had nothing to do with the killing.
Jody, no one believes you.
lying liar who lies.
Yeah. No one believes that bullshit.
Nope. She continues, I know I am innocent. God knows I am innocent. Travis knows I am innocent.
As he haunts her every night.
Right. Oh, by the way, this interview does play in trial later. So keep talking, Jody.
Ooh.
Around the same time, she did a couple more interviews with local media. Sure. She also went on 48 Hours.
Of course she did.
I know. She said during the fatal night, she and Travis were having fun and being carefree when things took a sudden turn. She's the fuck. Oh, I can't.
I do wonder if this case would have stayed more local if Jody had shut her fucking mouth.
I was wondering the same thing when I was doing this research. Like, she, yeah, if she would have just stayed quiet, I wonder if people, well.
I mean, local media would have still covered it for sure.
Well, right.
Like, Inside Edition, 48 Hours, like, they probably wouldn't have necessarily talked to her before the trial if she hadn't already been doing press.
Right.
And the story is just so outlandish.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, there's no way. Okay. So say, humor me for a second.
Okay.
Say that you and your boyfriend
mm-hmm.
are in your home
mm-hmm.
and two masked intruders go in,
mm-hmm.
like break in.
Mm-hmm. Happens all the time.
Absolutely. They kill your boyfriend and you get away.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to not report that to anybody?
I'm probably going to run yelling and screaming. In my neighborhood, everywhere. The
first thing I would do is report that.
Yeah.
I would call anyone who would listen. If I didn't have my phone,
yep.
I would bang on people's doors
yep.
until I would, like, my boyfriend, husband, whatever, is inside there with people who are killing him. Like, it's just such a stupid story.
She's, well, don't worry. The story changes.
I figured.
Yeah. So during the 48 hours, sorry, during the 48 hours interview, Jody said, quote, I heard a really loud pop. And the next thing I remember, I was lying next to the bathtub and Travis was screaming. At that point, I sort of was just trying to come around and kind of orientate myself to what was going on.
Okay, pause.
Orientate? Hey, I took it straight from the dumb bitch's mouth.
Orientate. Okay.
Keep trying going. To orientate herself.
Sure. That's a thing.
She then continued, and I looked up and I saw two other individuals in the bathroom. They were coming towards us.
Mm.
They were dressed in black, masked up, but it was clear that one was a man and the other was a woman.
Oh, so clear, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. She said in this interview, he pulled the trigger and nothing happened with the gun. So I just grabbed my purse, which was on the floor at that point. And I ran
in the bathroom, Jody?
And I ran down the stairs and out of there. And I left Travis there.
No, that is the biggest bullshit. What year is this again?
2008.
Oh, so it was before Pretty Little Liars started, because she described A in Pretty Little Liars.
She says, I looked past him and his gun, and I just didn't look back.
That is, okay.
She also says during this interview that Travis was still sort of on his hands and knees the whole time until I ran from the room, and that's the last time I saw him. Jody spent the next 4 years in custody waiting for trial.
Yeah.
The trial was one of the biggest trials to be televised. Because she won't shut her fucking mouth.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I wonder if it wouldn't have been if she hadn't done all of that media.
Probably.
With her dumbass story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is like the second that people catch on to these masked intruders, like, it's gone.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be talking about
it. That's everyone's biggest fear, basically, when you mm-hmm. have a home, is that mm-hmm. someone's going to break in and they're going to try to kill you in your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The logic behind it is a little lacking.
Yep.
Because it really isn't that common anymore.
No.
But yeah, they would latch onto that story. It's sort of like anything that just sounds a little bit too ridiculous is going to grab media attention.
Absolutely.
Like if you think about the big cases mm-hmm. that we've had, like, televised trials of and stuff, like,
mm-hmm.
What's the one where the mom, we think, killed her daughter?
Casey Anthony?
Yes.
Okay.
It was Kaylee?
Kaylee, yeah.
Was the little girl, right?
Yeah.
So, like, stuff like that, like, she just kept fucking lying.
Right.
And I think she was actually acquitted, so.
She was.
But in any case, like, she couldn't keep her story straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of why it gained so much media attention, because mm-hmm. they're like, this is a really dumb person mm-hmm. that yeah. we're going to watch go on trial.
Yeah.
And then, like, Scott Peterson, mm-hmm. like, with his
who's the guy with
hair.
Who's the guy with the owl?
That was Michael Peterson.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, that one's still.
Yeah. Like, it's just these sensational cases get all this media attention where Jodi had just shut her fucking mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It probably would have stayed pretty local to Arizona.
Probably.
It would have been big news there, I'm sure.
Right.
But, like, it wouldn't have been national news.
Right. Right.
Sorry. My own rant here.
That's okay. There were some pretrial motions, but I just want to highlight some of the key parts.
Okay.
Jodi's public defender asked to be removed from the case.
Okay.
In August of 2011, Jodi told the judge that she wanted to represent herself.
No.
But okay. she wasn't a lawyer, so that did not last long.
Yeah, I bet not.
But during this, Jodi wanted to submit some letters as evidence. She claimed Travis had sent them to her, and in the letters, Travis admitted to being attracted to younger boys.
There was
an investigation done on the letters, and they were proven forgeries. Jodi's cell was searched, and note cards were discovered where she had been practicing Travis's handwriting.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm. Motion denied.
Yeah. Oh, my. Well, first, okay. Question. Uh-huh. Sorry. What was the motion? What were they trying to do?
Enter
this?
Into Just evidence.
Entered into evidence?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So after that, Jodi told the judge that she thinks she was in over her head, so. They reinstated her counsel.
Okay.
But with this motion, it gave away Jodi's newest defense. Do you remember any of this?
No.
By the way? No,
I don't.
Okay.
Uh-uh.
Okay. I don't either. So the trial officially started on January 2nd, 2013, and it absolutely captivated the public's attention for its duration.
Yeah.
As we've talked about, because yeah. she won't yeah. shut up.
Does she go on the stand? That's probably a spoiler.
She sure does.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Jodi faced first degree murder charges, and the prosecution sought the death penalty, mm-hmm. arguing that the murder was premeditated, fueled by jealousy and resentment after Travis wanted to end their relationship completely.
And I would think narcissism.
Well, yeah. Yes.
Based on all his other shit, I would think a little bit of narcissism.
Yes. So this trial was set in Maricopa County before Judge Sherry Stevens. The prosecution was led by Juan Martinez, and the defense was led by Lawrence Kirk Nurmi and Jennifer Wilmot. I do call him Kirk. I don't ever call him Lawrence again, but his name is Lawrence.
So he went by Kirk Nurmi?
Kirk Nurmi, yeah.
Like Bert Nurmi, but Kirk Nurmi?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Kirk Nurmi.
Kirk Nurmi.
Okay. So Jennifer Wilmot would serve as the death penalty qualified defense attorney.
Okay.
Juan Martinez opened with a statement saying, "This is not a case of whodunit. Whodunit is sitting in the courtroom with us today. It's the defendant, Jodi Arias." I love stuff like that. Whodunit?
Whodunit?
He then continued to use Jodi's words against her. He presented a quote from Jodi where she called Travis a good man. And then he said, as his reward for being a good man, she slit his throat.
Oh.
During the 6 day of trial, prosecutor Juan Martinez showed the 20 plus photos taken in the recovered washing machine camera from the day Travis died.
Oh man. Okay. So they had to see nudes of Jodi in
mm-hmm.
court
mm-hmm.
and Travis, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. I've also seen them. Again, these are readily available online.
I don't want to see them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put this on the blog.
No. Well, I think that would be policed by Instagram for sure. If we put fucking nudes on.
Yeah, I don't want. They took down that Eichmann photo. I can't imagine what they'd do with nudes.
Oh God. We would lose our account for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
At one point, Juan Martinez threw the camera to the courtroom floor for dramatic effect. But ultimately, that just ended up with the defense objecting and getting angry that he potentially ruined evidence.
Why would he do that?
Like, he's dramatic as fuck.
Okay.
And just 2 days later, Juan again, I'm assuming for dramatic effect, put the explicit nude photos of Jodi and Travis Alexander's dead body on the court's overhead projector, I think, side by side.
See, and this is where, like, okay, I get what you're doing, but, like, he's a victim. He's dead. We don't need to see those photos.
No. Also, I say it later, but I'll say it now. Juan Martinez, not a good person.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
No. The prosecution told the jury the defense will say that Jody killed Travis in self-defense. But that was Jody's third version of what happened. First, she said she knew nothing about the murder. Then she said the two mass intruders did it. And now it was self-defense.
Against what? Like, she's trying to say that he came at her?
Oh, she is. Yeah. It's, it's fucked.
Okay.
But this wasn't any more of the truth than the other two versions. Right. It was just another lie to cover up the brutal murder of Travis Alexander. Then Juan Martinez offered up the prosecution's theory of what happened. They believe that Jody had planned to murder Travis. She had driven to Mesa that day with a gun and the knife. She had dyed her hair back to brown so she wasn't easily recognizable.
Oh yeah, because she had like bleached blonde hair.
Bleached blonde hair, yes. She rented a car so she wouldn't be easily noticed. I'm assuming since she was stalking him regularly, people probably knew what she drove.
Yeah.
She had then bought plastic gas cans and put them in the vehicle so that she could make the trip to and from Mesa without having to purchase gas. Yeah, she did not want to be caught on the surveillance cameras.
That's right. Was she the one? She wasn't the one that did the diapers, though, right?
No. That is a totally different woman that was stalking her ex-boyfriend. Astronaut. Yes. Yeah, space diapers.
Yes.
Yes. There would be no record of her being in Arizona in June 2008 with all of this.
Honestly, that's pretty impressive.
Not driving her car, she's dyed her hair back.
Yep. No one would have seen her and recognized her from a distance. Yeah.
Correct. She was obsessed. She was angry. She was supposed to be going on that trip to Cancun with Travis. Travis had apparently invited her earlier in the year, but as the trip got closer, he informed her he was going to be taking someone else. A friend, or maybe he told her he was seeing Mimi Hall at this point. I highly doubt it, since she didn't react great when he said that he was dating Lisa.
Right.
If you recall from the first episode, she also tormented Lisa.
Yes, she did.
So Jody had driven to his house, arriving in the middle of the night. They woke up and had sex, took photos of each other, and when he was in a vulnerable position, naked in the shower, she attacked him. This is all what the prosecution is saying. Juan Martinez concluded this by playing the Inside Edition interview, where Jody has stated, "No jury can convict me. I am innocent, and you can mark my words on that." Martinez then asked the jury to mark Jody's words.
Eesh.
I know. It's like stuff like this. It's like, yeah, go get him, Juan. But at the same time, it's like, no, you're actually a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
So during the defense attorney's opening argument, Jennifer Wilmot acknowledged that Jody did kill Travis.
Oh, good start.
But she said that the key question in the case was what motivated her to do so.
Premeditation probably, too.
Yeah. She then told the jury that Jody acted in self-defense. Travis was the one who began the altercation. He actually lunged at her in anger. He knocked her to the ground where there was a struggle. If she did not have to defend herself, no one would be here. I fucking hate this. Like, he is dead. Knock it off.
And self-defense is not 27 stab wounds.
Right. And a gunshot wound.
Plus a gunshot wound. Like, that's anger. That's like intimate anger. That is not self-defense.
Absolutely. I agree. So the defense went on to say that Travis pressured Jody to have sex with him.
No.
Orally, anally, and vaginally.
Oh my God. Really? They're going to drag him like that?
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
They then presented the biggest shock yet. Travis Alexander was actually the one who was addicted to sex, not Jody. Jennifer Wilmot told the jury that they would bring an expert on that would testify that Jody and Travis's relationship fit the definition of domestic violence.
Yeah, probably one-sided in the way that they're not going to prove.
I was going to say, absolutely it was.
Yeah.
At the hands of Jody.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'll keep my comments to myself for now.
Are you sure?
Just think. I'm sorry. No, I can't. I'm just thinking about the addicted to sex thing. Like, he's newly having sex. As far as we're aware, he's only had sex with Jody. Like,
as far as like I could find in any research, it's like, only Jody.
There's no fucking way that he's the one that's addicted to it. He wouldn't even, if she hadn't initiated, he wouldn't even know what he was missing.
Exactly.
Because he was supposed to wait for marriage.
Also, again, back to like how he thought she was, that he said that she was maybe like a nymphomaniac.
Yeah, and but, he said that before.
Right. I'm just saying that they probably had sex every time they saw each other, but they lived long distance.
Right. Yeah.
They didn't see each other every day.
No. And yeah,
so like knock it off.
There's just, it doesn't make any sense because like he dated, it was Mimi and there was, who was before him? Lisa. Like they were not having sex because he wanted to marry them and that's the Mormon thing. Mm-hmm. So like there's no way he's addicted to it. It just doesn't make sense to me because Jody's not like chained in his basement or anything. Like that just doesn't make sense. Sorry, that was probably inappropriate. But just that doesn't make any fucking sense.
The first witness to be called was Mimi Hall. Mm-hmm. She testified that they met at church and had been on a few dates. Mm-hmm. She also said she always felt safe with Travis.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
Detective Esteban Flores was up next, and he talked about his original phone call with Jody. You know, the one where she called him before he could call her?
Yeah.
They played this call for the jury, and in the call, she said how good of friends her and Travis were, and how they had and how she had heard about his death through work. She also apparently said on this phone call that she heard there was a lot of blood at the crime scene. She also asked if they had found the murder weapon at the scene.
Question.
Way to keep it cool, Jody.
That's what I was going to say. How on earth she heard there was a lot of blood through work?
Mm-hmm. Yes, through this like Mormon MLM, basically. Yeah.
An MMLM.
A Mormon multi-level marketing. Gotcha. Yes. Detective Flores then went on to talk about the two's relationship. He recalled Jody telling him that they had dated for 5 months, and then she had broken up with him because she had suspicions that Travis was cheating on her, and she could not trust him.
No.
They did remain intimate, however, but not romantic at all. So the interesting thing about the breakup is that Jody has always said, except for in this phone call, that it was amicable. Jody and Detective Flores continued this phone call by telling her that Travis's friends said that she was basically a stalker and that she had done many things while they were together to make them feel this way. Jody totally dismissed this, saying something along the lines of, well, people are only saying that because I'm the ex-girlfriend. It's nothing to do with the fact that you went in through the doggy door.
Yeah, like, no, Jody, they're saying it because you were stalking him.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they were saying it.
So, following the end of the recording, the defense had a turn to cross-examine Detective Flores. Mm-hmm. Kirk Nurmi started right off the bat and asked Detective Flores if he had seen the emails that Travis Alexander had sent to Jody Arias. Detective Flores said he had seen them, but there was over 80,000 emails to go through. So Kirk
forgot about that too!
Yeah. So then Kirk asked if he had seen the ones where Travis had called Jody names, such as whore and slut. And Detective Flores said he had seen those names mentioned a few times. I don't really understand. Like, there's no context given, but I just don't understand what he's trying to do here.
I have no idea. I thought there was going to be more. I have no idea.
No.
Like, it reminds me of...
They had phone sex pretty regularly. Those could just have been stuff that...
Words that she liked being called?
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're not kink shaming. It just might be something that she liked. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of, small spoilers for Jury Duty if you haven't watched it, of the episode of Jury Duty where the bad defense attorney is like, would you even hire you? like the jury's like, what is happening here? This guy isn't helping him. Yeah, so like maybe everyone's like, where is he going with this? Then he goes nowhere.
That's just it. Like, there's no context given that I could find. So it's like, what are you trying to say? That, he did call her a slut and whore, not in a sexual way. Okay, so?
They're trying to victim blame.
I know what they're doing, but it's shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, it's going to play bad for a jury.
Yeah.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like, definitely.
It's not going to look good.
No. So the medical examiner also took the stand, and they talked about how it was impossible to know the order of the attack because of the state his body was in once it was discovered and brought in.
It was several days, right?
5 days, yep.
Ugh, yeah.
It was impossible to know if he was stabbed, shot or if his throat had been slit first.
Oh my God.
Ultimately, it doesn't really matter because any single one of them would have been fatal.
Oh man. That's not a, like a, no death is nice, but you know what, like that's not
yeah. Yeah.
It's a very unpleasant way to go, any of those three things.
The medical examiner also said, also did talk about how the stab wounds had been inflicted with major force and they were very, very deep. Yeah. So again, with the rage that we've talked about.
And that would, again,
self-defense would not have been 27 correct. Times.
No.
Yeah.
No. Self-defense is like maybe a couple, but it's not to cause damage. It's to get
maybe
away.
Maybe the gunshot wound to the head, but that would maybe be it.
That'd be it. And like no self-defense wound is a throat slit.
Oh God, I know. Oh my God, no kidding. I didn't even think of that. You're so right. Yeah,
there's no way.
So the next to testify was Ryan Burns. Ryan Burns was mentioned in part one briefly. He was Jodi Arias' new beau, who she was going to visit the night of June 4th.
That's right. Ryan Burns.
She used him as... Yeah, you thought he was fake.
I did. I was like, that doesn't sound like a real name.
She used him essentially as an alibi by saying she couldn't have possibly killed Travis because she wasn't in Mesa. She was driving to Utah to see Ryan. Mm. Ryan did say that they had a brief relationship and Jodi had come to visit him the night after Travis Alexander was murdered.
Maybe Jodi just really likes to drive.
The trip was planned. Jodi was supposed to go see him, but she had showed up almost a whole day late, and she had a couple cuts on her hand.
You don't say.
He said during their hangout that they cuddled, and while they were talking, they would sometimes kiss a little, and after each kiss, it would get a little hotter and a little heavier.
Ew. That's what he said on the stand?
That's what I'm saying right now.
Okay.
I think he just said hot and heavy, but I kind of liked it this way better. You don't.
Well, they dressed her up like a librarian, right? For her trial?
A total. Yes.
Like the big glasses and like frumpy clothes and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So I read, and I did not write this down. I read that they had to put her in frumpy clothes because she couldn't be handcuffed because that doesn't look good to a jury, but she was in like leg restraints. Mm. So they probably, I think that they had to put her in something a little frumpier so that they couldn't. But I mean, total make under.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're probably like, none of your clothes are going to fit over these leg irons because right. We know how you were dressing. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Again, not trying to shame Jodi or anything, but just like her story is just nonsense.
She's
backwards and forwards. It's just nonsense.
Yeah. She's a lying liar who lies.
Exactly.
So, this is something he did say, since you called me out for the last thing. He did say this. Oh, Ryan said that he never removed her clothing and he never touched her breasts or anything.
Thanks, Ryan. Thank you.
Jodi explained to him that the reason she was almost a day late is because she got lost and had to stop to rest.
And he bought that.
Hey, I don't know, dude. So he did ask her about the cuts on her hand, and she said she cut them while working at Margaritaville in Yreka. Also, it's spelled Y-R-E-K-A. I'm worried now that it's Eureka, not Yreka, and I've been saying it wrong the whole time.
I think I've heard it said, like, pronounced Yreka.
Okay. Well,
I have no idea how to say it.
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
We're going to keep calling it
Yreka. Okay, cool. So it turns out that there is no Margaritaville in Yreka. Why couldn't you just say that you were at work, you fucking idiot, or you were at home? But no, she said she cut it while working at Margaritaville
in Yreka.
Correct.
Excellent. Also, what are you doing at your job if you're cutting your hands at Margaritaville in Yreka?
I have no idea.
Like, what are you doing wrong? How many plates did you break?
That's what I was wondering. It's like, did you drop a glass? Yeah. Were you trying to do cool knife tricks where you throw the lime up, throw the knife up, and then you try to cut it in the air? That's what I pictured, obviously.
I hope that was it. But again, if she's cutting herself doing that, why is her hand where the knife is?
I don't know, man. Also, Ryan noted that she had previously been blonde, and when she showed up, she had dark hair.
With no explanation, I would assume.
Yeah. The prosecution then questioned Ryan Burns about Jodi Arias' strength, and he said she was a lot stronger than she looked. Because if you remember, she was She had a cute figure.
That's right, a cute figure.
Hot bod.
But she was strong enough to resist him touching her boobs.
Apparently. Ryan also said that he told the police he tried to reach her 3 or 4 times, and each time the call had gone to voicemail.
Okay.
So they also called a Yreka detective to the stand shortly after this to ask him where the Margaritaville in Yreka was.
What if they're just like, where's the margarita?
I'm sorry.
Where is it? No, I kind of love that because he'd be like,
So he was basically just up there to say that there was no Margaritaville in Yreka.
Also, imagine being called to the stand. He's a detective.
Mm-hmm.
Solely to be like, where's the Margaritaville? And he's like, there's no Margaritaville. Thank you, sir. No further questions.
So it's funny you say that. I read somewhere that another detective was called, but I'm wondering if it's the same one, because I also think it's weird that you were only up for the Margaritaville and then they call another detective.
Like, this guy's not good at his job, but he sure knows about the Margaritaville. So we're going to call him for that specifically.
So yeah, it's either the same detective, possibly a new one. Okay. I'm not sure. But okay. This is the detective that they called, or that arrived when Jody's grandparents' house was broken into.
Oh, yeah.
I brought that up at the end of episode one.
Yep.
He said that the whole situation felt weird because only 4 things were taken in the break-in.
Were they all used at Travis's house?
No. But, like, I think I saw that there was, like, a jar of change was taken, but, like, there was money laying out that wasn't. But specifically, no other guns were taken, only the 25 caliber, and it was taken from a gun safe.
She's so bad at this.
She's terrible.
Like, either you take all the guns or none of the guns.
Yes.
Or you take all the money or none of the money.
Yes.
You can't stage a half break-in.
That's why it's like, whatever.
He's like, I also know where the Margaritavilles are, by the way.
Yreka has 0. So following this testimony, the prosecution played Jody's interrogation video.
Excellent.
They played a clip of Jody where she said that I would never hurt him. But if I did, that I'd fully be ready to face the consequences. I am all for the 10 Commandments. What's your face?
The 10 Commandments is not... Okay.
They also brought to the stand the owner of the car rental place where Jody had rented the vehicle from.
Yep.
He said that she rented it on June 2nd, 2008, and returned it a few days later with about 2,500 miles on the vehicle.
Ooh.
When she returned it, the floor mats were missing, and there was red stains on the seat. But he assumed it was juice and cleaned the stains.
Ew!
Mm-hmm. So following the prosecution's arrest, the defense filed a motion asking for the dismissal of the premeditation charge, citing that the prosecution had not presented a strong enough case.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't fly, did it?
No. The judge said she'd review the motion and put the court in recess for about a week, but ultimately the motion was denied by the judge.
Okay.
When the trial resumed, the defense brought Jody Arias' ex-boyfriend, Daryl Brewer, to the stand. He testified he and Jody had met in 2001 at work, and they dated for about 4 years. The defense talked about their relationship and how in love they had been. But on cross-examination, the prosecution asked him if he recalled when he told the investigators that Jody was pretty wild and aggressive during sex. He said he didn't recall that statement, but he acknowledged the couple had engaged in oral, anal, and vaginal sex in their time together.
They're together for 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw somewhere that this was like the prosecution's way of saying that since she did it with Daryl, Travis wasn't the first person she did it with. I don't know.
You're right. The weird threads that this...
Yeah, I don't really understand, like... Okay, you can do something with one person and not want to do it with someone else?
Absolutely.
Like, okay, whatever.
Maybe they're just trying to prove that, like...
Again, Travis is the aggressor is what they're trying to prove.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was trying to say, but he's clearly not?
Well, this is the...
This is a defense.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think this threat is working for me.
No, so. It's not. It, like, when I was doing it, I was like, wait, I was getting confused because I was getting confused who was prosecution, who was defense. Yep. I'm trying. Yep. I do apologize.
No, it's a little confusing.
Yeah. Especially because whatever. And Jennifer Wilmont gets thrown in there, so that also confuses me what side she's on sometimes.
Yep. But. Yep. Well, and then knowing that the prosecutor is not great.
Right.
Like, that also makes it confusing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So during his testimony, Daryl said that they lived together when they dated. They had discussed marriage, but ultimately, Daryl was recently divorced and when they got together, so he really wasn't ready for another marriage.
Sure.
He said that he also said that he never knew her to have a temper. But again, just because you do or don't with one person doesn't mean not all relationships are the same.
Yes. And was he quite a bit older than her?
I believe so. I think he was in his 50s and she was in her 20s.
So like or maybe 40s. Could have also been like a quote unquote power dynamic differential mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
Where like maybe
her and Travis were only a couple years apart and Daryl was a lot older.
Yeah. And like maybe her manipulation was working with Travis and didn't really work with Daryl.
Maybe.
So like she didn't feel like she could control Daryl, but she felt like she could control Travis. And like when the control went away.
Yeah.
That's when the rage came out. I'm not saying that's for sure what it is, but
yeah. No, that very well could be.
Yeah.
He did also admit that Jody did some creepy things while they were together, such as taking photos of him without his consent while he was nude and in the shower.
Oh my God.
It's like, Jody, knock it off.
Yeah, why? It's not like you get a good photo of people in the shower.
I don't know. I have no idea. Huh. He said their relationship fell apart in the fall of 2006 after they stopped having sex because Jody said she wanted to save herself for marriage. AKA, she started sleeping with Travis.
Yeah, yep, yep. Mm.
They broke up at the end of 2006, but remained friends. And in the fall of 2000, I said in the fall of 2008, Jody called him, but that's not true. So in the spring of 2008, Jody called him up and asked if she could borrow some gas cans because she was taking a road trip. He then said he gave her the gas cans on June 3rd, 2008.
She got him involved. Come on, Jody.
The defense then called Travis's ex-girlfriend, Lisa, to the stand to start attacking Travis's character. Hmm. She testified that she felt cheated and lied to in her relationship with Travis. They began dating off and on in July of 2007. She said she broke up with him after she became suspicious that he may be cheating on her with Jody Arias.
Mm.
After some time apart, they got back together, but then she felt some pressure from Travis to get married.
Ah.
She didn't feel ready for it, so they broke up again. Also, I just have to point this out. When Travis and Lisa met, she was 18, he was 29. Yeah. Like I've said before, I don't really give a shit about age gaps. But all I'm saying is that he probably was ready for marriage and she probably actually wasn't.
Correct. And like, if he was trying to at the end, like when they got back together, like kind of get rid of Jody, like he probably was like, let's get married real quick.
Yeah.
Maybe. That'll make her go away.
Yep.
Which probably wouldn't have, but.
No.
Also, to know that Jody was bullying an 18-year-old really makes mm-hmm. this sound way worse.
Also, when she was running up to Lisa's house and, like, banging on the doors and windows, probably Lisa's parents' house.
Oh, my God. It probably was Lisa's parents' house. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that. It doesn't say that anywhere. But, yeah, after I was, like, putting all this together, I was like, holy shit.
Wow. That makes it.
She was bullying an 18-year-old. Cool, yeah, Jody.
Like that changes how I look at it a little bit.
Yep.
Yikes.
So the defense then asked Lisa about an email she sent in September of 2007. Lisa said in the email to Travis that she told him she didn't want him to text her or email her anymore. She said in the email that they would make out for far too long, and she felt that Travis was only using her for her body. She told Travis she felt a lot of sexual tension went from him, which made her feel used and dirty. She also said that she continuously asked Travis not to grab her butt in public, but she didn't feel like he was listening to her.
He was so much older than her.
Mm-hmm. She testified that after the email, they talked about it at length and said that he was actually going to listen to her and stop doing all these things that bothered her. But ultimately, they did end up breaking up for good in February of 2008. Okay. There was much more stuff mentioned in this email, but those were just stuff that stood out to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the stand, Jennifer Wilmot asked Lisa if she was surprised to learn that Travis was not a virgin. And Lisa said, yes, she was very surprised.
I wonder if it made some stuff click for her, though.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, especially that they would make out for far too long. She felt some sexual tension from him.
Yeah, he was grabbing her ass.
Yeah. Hey, it's Lauren.
And Amanda.
And we host Most Wanted, a true crime podcast, and we have some exciting news for you.
Mark your calendars for July 12th to 14th, 2024. We're heading to the True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival in Denver, Colorado, and you won't want to miss it.
Amanda and I attended the 2023 festival, and we are so excited about the changes coming in 2024. They've rolled out a podcast education track tailored to seasoned creators and those dreaming of launching their own podcast. This weekend isn't just about podcasts. It's about advocacy, ethics, and building a community.
Worried about costs? Don't worry about it. This festival is designed with you in mind, an affordable experience without sacrificing quality. There are no inflated costs, just a weekend packed with authenticity, education, and networking. Have you ever wished for genuine one-on-one interactions with your favorite creators? Well, now's your chance.
Don't miss out. Snag your tickets at truecrimepodcastfestival.com for an unforgettable experience. Join us and use code WANTED to let them know we sent you. See you there. Okay. So, on February 4th, 2013, Jody Arias took the stand, where she would spend the next 19 days.
19 days?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Also, apparently Arizona is one of the states that the jury can ask questions.
Ooh.
So they do that too. And I think so, that's...
I know grand juries can usually ask questions. I didn't know juries could ask questions. That's fascinating.
I wrote the other states that do it down, but that's a little bit later in my script. But okay. Yes. So Jody spent 9 days under direct examination from lead defense attorney Kirk Nurmi. His first question was to ask Jody if she had killed Travis Alexander, to which she said, yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
Then Kirk Nurmi asked her why, and she said the simple answer is he attacked me and I had to defend myself. Mm-mm. From there, they went on to talk about her childhood, to which, as I mentioned in part one, she said was almost ideal. But now she said her childhood was fine until age of 7, when she started getting abused regularly by her parents until she moved out. Mm. She said the beatings became so regular that her mother would carry a wooden spoon in her purse so she could beat Jody whenever she wanted to. Also,
if that's true, that's horrible, but like in public?
I guess. Also, it's said, like it's noted that Jody's mom was there every day of her trial, like supporting her daughter.
And she just said stuff about her mom?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay.
The questioning then moved to all the lies she had told from the time she had called Detective Esteban Flores to her trial.
Mm-hmm.
During her testimony, Jody addressed the Inside Edition interview, specifically the line about no jury would ever convict her. She said that on the stand that she said it not because she was innocent, but because at the time of the interview, quote, I had plans to commit suicide, she said. So I was extremely confident that no jury would convict me because I didn't expect any of you to be here. Even though, if you go back to her actual quote, she says, no jury can convict me. I am innocent. And yeah. You can mark my words on that.
Yeah.
But again, lies.
Wow.
Yep.
It's like she's trying to gaslight, but they have receipts.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think she's hoping that like everyone just forgets. On February 5th, her testimony was about her relationship with Travis, how they met, how they went to dinner together, how they had an instant connection and attraction to each other. She talked about a few weeks after they met, she went on a trip with him and his friends, and after everyone went to bed, he came into her room and they performed oral sex on each other, and then they went to bed. She said this first sexual experience together bothered her because it was too much too soon. Again, Travis is the aggressor here.
Right, yeah, exactly, which if he'd never had sex before,
mm-hmm.
Would he even know what he was doing?
That's just...
I mean, I guess you can watch porn and kind of figure it out, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. She didn't see him again for another few weeks until they met up for coffee. She said during their coffee date, they went out to her car where they made out, and Travis said he was horny and wanted her to perform oral sex on him. Jody said she felt attracted to him and she wanted to do what he wanted her to do. So she performed oral sex on him in the car, and afterwards, he pulled up his pants and left. She then said he refused to kiss her goodbye because it was gross. After Travis left this encounter, he left her a voicemail saying that he was displeased with himself over the encounter. By day three of the trial, she talked about the evolution of their sex life. She talked about how Travis's view of sex was similar to Bill Clinton, where it was only penis and in vagina counted as sex. Yeah. Which is, you brought it up last week. That
I know. Yeah, that's why I was laughing. I was like, how funny that I brought that up. Yeah.
I literally added that later. I was like, where did I put that in? I have to go add that Amanda said.
I did bring it up because, yeah, that's part of his dumb defense during the at the time was that the blowjob that Monica Lewinsky gave him under the Oval Office desk wasn't really sex. And it also wasn't sex because he wasn't giving her any pleasure. So therefore, it didn't count.
Just sounds like you're a dick, Bill Clinton.
Right. Yeah. And also at one point he was just like, it depends on what the definition of is. And we're like, what now?
What? All right.
Excuse me, sir.
I'm sorry, huh? So she also brought up a separate time that she spent the night at Travis's house and she woke up with him having sex with her. One of the most memorable moments of the trial was later that day. Jody testified that in January of 2008, she walked in on him masturbating. He was masturbating to a picture of a young boy in his underwear. She testified that she walked in on him laying in bed and she got embarrassed and he started grabbing at papers on the bed and one fell off the bed and floated in front of her, landing face up. And it was a photograph of a little boy.
Okay, so... a lot of this that she's saying, like, I could see where there are some grains of truth in parts of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he's the aggressor by any means. I think that she is framing a story to make herself look more innocent than she ever was. But this part about the little boys, I just don't believe.
Well, you also have to remember that she wrote herself a note in Travis's handwriting.
Yes, that's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
I just don't, like, there's a lot of it where, like, she is... like women aren't believed and you have to kind of believe women, like that's kind of my motto in general, but
she's not reliable.
She's lying.
Yeah. She said I didn't know how to react, so I left, but later returned back to Travis's house that evening and asked him to explain himself. She testified that Travis confided in her that he had a sexual interest in children, but that he preferred sex with women because it made him feel more normal.
Mm-mm. I don't believe that.
She then went on to say that he did seem ashamed of himself. Again, she's not reliable.
No.
Following that, Jody went on to describe the abuse she experienced by Travis. Mm-mm. She said she and Travis had gotten into an argument where he pushed her down on the ground and kicked her in the ribs. He attempted to kick her again, but she blocked it with her hand, and the kick broke her finger, and to this day, her finger is still crooked, and then she held up her finger so she could show the jury.
There are lots of ways you can break your finger, Jody. I broke my finger playing softball.
She was probably breaking her finger when she was cutting limes in the air at Margaritaville.
Probably. In Wairika.
In Wairika. A few days later, Jody testified about the last few hours leading up to Travis's death. Jody said she told Travis she had a trip planned to go see Ryan Burns in Utah, but Travis asked her to come see him instead. She said Travis was being very sweet, so she went to go see him. Mm-mm. She said she arrived in the early morning hours and parked in her usual spot in the middle of the driveway. She said when she got there, they watched dumb videos and did some other things, but then they went to bed. She then testified that they woke up between 12:30 and 1 p.m. the afternoon of June 4th, where they engaged in some light bondage play. She said that Travis tied her up with a rope, and he cut the amount that he needed with a knife that he got from the kitchen.
She's trying to make an excuse for why the knife was up there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No rope was ever found.
Yeah, because it's not real. I kind of giggled at the light bondage play because, like, sure, Jody. Mm.
I like whether sure, whether it's yeah whether it's true or not, it doesn't really matter. No. But
you know how I know that she's an asshole?
Hmm.
She parked in the middle of the driveway.
It's a, she. It's so. She said it was her spot in the driveway, which happened to be in the middle of the driveway. But it's a three stall garage, so I'm assuming it was like the middle stall, but like in the driveway. But yes, okay. She, it said
I guess
the middle
it's a
of,
little better. But I just pictured it as like park in the dead center of the driveway. My spot.
You want to know? I know she's an asshole. I don't know. I got about like 60 pages of proof. Do you need more?
Lots of reasons, but like. People who park so no one else can fit in the driveway. Asshole.
So after the bondage session, they took some photos and videos, but deleted them after they were done. She said she took a shower and got dressed so that she could actually go on her road trip to Utah. But then something happened where he got really mad.
Question. Sorry. Was there any rope in any of the photos?
No.
Okay.
No rope was ever found.
So just more nonsense. Okay.
Yep. So he was really mad and he threw something at her head. I think I saw that it was a CD. She then testified that she thought that she had done something stupid because he was getting angry. He then grabbed her by her arms, smacked her in the face, and then spun her around, forced her on the bed, and then had sex with her again.
I don't believe that.
After they were done, she went to clean herself up. And then she came back into the bedroom and they took more photos. And he was totally okay with these photos because he had been working out. So he liked showing himself off.
Working out has nothing to do with consent. They're two very separate things.
So the next day, the testimony continued. She said their photo session moved into the bathroom. And at one point, she dropped his camera. And Travis got so mad at her, he lunged at her and body slammed her to the floor.
Like in wrestling?
I picture he like chest bumped her and she fell, but I don't know.
I like the picture more that he was trying to do a wrestling move on his bathroom floor. That makes sense.
Apparently. She said that she ran into his closet to escape him. They were both freaking out and he was chasing her. She said she didn't want him to grab her again. She said at this point, she remembered Travis had a gun in his closet, so she grabbed it to protect herself.
Mm-mm.
She said she turned around and pointed the gun at Travis so he would stop chasing her.
Mm.
I thought pointing the gun at him would make him stop, but he came up to her, grabbed her waist, and the gun went off. I didn't mean to shoot him. I didn't even know I shot him. She said after that, she doesn't really remember much. She may have put the knife in the dishwasher and then found herself driving barefoot through the desert westward with the sun in her eyes before she stopped to throw the gun into the weeds and wash the blood off her hands with bottled water from the trunk of her rental. She may have. Not sure. Doesn't remember.
And she doesn't remember stabbing him 27 times?
Nope.
Before she put the knife in the dishwasher?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. On cross-examination, her demeanor changed a lot. She had come off during the defense as a damsel in distress who had no choice to escape her ex-boyfriend. But now, talking to Juan Martinez, she had an attitude and was snarky to him. She had successfully held off prosecutor Martinez's steady attack, his insults, and word games. She sometimes even smiled at him as she blocked his questions, corrected his grammar, and lots of people speculated this was the real Jody Arias.
I bet it was.
I bet it was, too. Juan Martinez did not let up on her, though.
Because she would have had time to practice with her attorney how she was going to be when he Correct. Was questioning her on the stand. Yeah.
Correct. A lot of people thought that maybe he went too hard on her, which he didn't need to. The evidence speaks for itself.
Sure.
But because of who he is, he needed to.
Yeah.
This is where I give you the fun fact that Juan Martinez is not a good guy. He loved
I like the hand wave. Not a good guy.
He would like sign autographs during this.
Ew, what? Yeah,
he really liked this attention that he was getting for being
he was famous enough to sign autographs?
He loved that he was a televised asshole. Like, he loved it.
Ew, okay.
The following day, he showed the autopsy photos and Jody cried while looking at them. He asked her why she was crying and then asked if she cried when she killed him. Juan Martinez said, "All of these lies are meant for your benefit so you can escape responsibility, right?" To which Jody responded, "Yeah, so I could escape whatever for the time being." He went on to play the 48 hours interview where she again said no jury would convict her. Like, she's just a dick in like all of these interviews. Juan said that after the clip, quote, "You came in expecting to be acquitted because you've told all of these stories, don't you?" And Jody said, "I can't predict the future."
Except when she's on TV.
After the cross-examination, the jury was allowed to ask questions to Jody. You can do this in Arizona, Indiana, and Colorado.
Oh.
And on March 5th, 2013, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Sherry Stevens read more than 150 questions from the jury to Jody Arias.
Whoa!
So Stevens and the attorneys had already eliminated questions that were inappropriate or poked into areas precluded from the trial.
Sure.
Tons of questions, but I'll just read a couple.
Okay.
"After you shot him, did you run out of the house? Did you try to clean up the scene? Why delete photos off the camera of Travis? Why did you put the camera in the washing machine? What happened to the knife?" They asked point blank how they were to tell when Jody Arias was lying and when she wasn't.
It's a good question.
These questions clearly pointed to the direction of how the jury felt about Jody.
Yeah.
A lying liar who lies.
Yes. Yep.
Many other people testified, but ultimately closing arguments came on May 4th, and Jody's defense argued that the premeditation theory just did not make sense.
It does, actually.
Like, when Juan Martinez basically lays out the prosecution, it's like, yes, this is what happened. She had the gun and the knife. She went to his house.
To me, the gas cans.
Yes, the rental car.
Yeah, like, all of there that was, is huge.
There was another thing that they tried to give her a red car at the rental place, and she asked for a different color because red stands out.
She wouldn't want to get pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There's nothing about what happened on June 4th that was planned. Jody simply snapped. So at this point, they had given up on the self-defense claim and had moved on to her snapping. So 4th?
At like mid-trial? Yep. They just decided to switch their theory?
Basically.
Oh my God.
The prosecution laid out their theory again, the rental, the gas cans, everything we just talked about.
Yep.
Juan Martinez described the extent and the variety of Travis's wounds. He said, "There is no evidence that Travis laid a hand on her, ever. Nothing indicates that this is anything less than a slaughter. There was no way to appease this woman who just wouldn't leave him alone."
Wow.
Yeah. "This is not a case about guilt and innocence. This is a case about death and life," said Mel McDonald, a former judge and federal prosecutor who is now a Phoenix defense lawyer. So I just grabbed this little clip that I thought just kind of, because this was after the fact. "I don't think the defense had a choice," he said. "Before she took the stand, she established herself as a serial liar and someone who murders a man and goes to bed with another guy the next day. Every part of her was so dark. They had nothing to lose." The prosecutors say that it was a premeditated killing steeped in jealousy. An autopsy showed she stabbed Alexander more than 24 times, slit his throat, shot him in the forehead, and left him in the shower for 5 days while she tried to cover up her tracks, taking time out for a passionate encounter with another man. With no one to corroborate Arias's version of events, the nude photographs from his digital camera undercutting her timeline, her lawyers took a risk by calling her as a witness. The problem is, once she goes up there, you as the counsel lose control.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the jury deliberated for about 15 hours, and they found Jody Ann Arias guilty of first-degree murder.
Yep.
And after 3 hours of deliberation, the jury determined Jody Arias would be eligible for the death penalty.
Oh, wow. I don't think I realized that.
Mm-hmm. So during the penalty phase, Travis's family read victim impact statements. His sisters testified about what this meant for them and how he missed out on having a life and children, and their kids wouldn't get their uncle anymore. It was really emotional. I think everyone was in tears.
Yeah.
Jodi then gave her allocution on May 21st, 2013, pleading to be given a life sentence in prison after being wrongfully convicted of first-degree murder.
Uh-huh.
She goes, "This is the worst mistake of my life. It's the worst thing I've ever done. It's the worst thing I ever could have seen myself doing. In fact, I couldn't see myself doing it. Before that day, I wouldn't even harm a spider."
She made that so about her.
Oh, so it's pretty long. I just clipped out like two more sentences, basically.
Please, please.
"In many ways, my family has suffered a great loss. Mm-hmm. Their pain is fresh because they only learned about it 2 weeks ago." Mm. The moment the verdict was read.
Oh, I was like, sorry.
"But as I stand here now, I can't in good conscience ask you to sentence me to death because of them," as she points at her family. Like, it's so about me.
Yeah, that's all about her. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it goes on and
even
on
as
and
she's
on.
Like, "I did do that, but it really affected me. I'm a victim."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jeez.
So the jury then sat, the jury that sat for the trial found the murder was especially cruel, making Jodi eligible for the death penalty. However, the same jury was unable to reach a unanimous decision on whether she should live or die. A new jury was impaneled in October of 2014 to decide Arias's fate, but it too didn't reach a unanimous decision.
Really?
In the end, the jury voted 11-1 in favor of death, which took the death penalty off the table and left a judge to sentence Arias to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
Jodi has appealed both her sentence and conviction, claiming prosecutorial misconduct.
Sure. And with Juan Martinez there, she might have a fair case, actually.
Okay. So that's basically everything for trial, but I have to get into, yes, the Juan Martinez of it.
Please.
All. Because Juan Martinez was so aggressive to her on the stand and had an out-of-the-norm way of presenting things, an appeals court looked at it in 2019. And in March of 2020, they upheld her conviction and sentence because the evidence was there, the proof was there, so the conviction stands. However, they did agree that there was prosecutorial misconduct and turned the concerns over to the State Bar of Arizona in 2020. And in 2020, Juan Martinez was disbarred.
Wow.
Quote, "After a 30-year career as a prosecutor, high-profile lawyer Juan Martinez has been disbarred. The disbarment comes 2 days after a November trial has been scheduled involving the State Bar of Arizona complaint against Martinez. The complaint involved allegations that Martinez sexually harassed women he worked with at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. The State Bar, which investigates lawyers, also accused Martinez of leaking information to a blog during the Jodi Arias murder trial and lying to investigators about having a sexual relationship with her."
He was sleeping with Jodi Arias?
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be so surprised.
You really shouldn't.
Man. Okay. I didn't know that part. That was also much more recent than I realized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's, yeah.
That was like right at the beginning of COVID, so I probably was like under a rock.
I honestly, it was probably just an Arizona thing, how this trial probably maybe should have stayed.
Yeah.
It was probably like everyone in Arizona knew because he was a high profile prosecutor. Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, if you're not, you know, there's not much coverage on Jodi Arias anymore. So maybe no one really.
Unless you had like a Google alert on her or something. Because the headlines are probably like Juan Martinez, prosecutor of Jodi Arias trial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's probably stuff like that.
Yeah. So the State Bar of Arizona made a statement that this is a just outcome, him being disbarred.
Okay.
Also, the other key player during this trial, Kirk Nurmi, said that this case ruined his life.
Oh, poor Kirk Nurmi.
He asked to be taken off this case early on because he did not get along with Jodi Arias. In fact, he quit the public defender's office because he thought it would help his request to be taken off the case.
Oh my God.
It did not. Jodi Arias specifically wrote to the judge saying, "I need Kirk Nurmi, no one else, and this is what I want." And he was required to stay on against his will.
Oh my God.
He said the public perception of him following this trial, he became the most hated man in America because it seemed like he believed Jodi's lies about Travis being a pedophile and abusive while no one else believed those claims and there was no proof of them.
Right.
But in reality, he did not believe them. He actually went as far as to try to disprove them so he wouldn't have to support that defense. But he was unable to do so, so ethically, he had to support fucking Jody Arias.
Oh, man.
He said Jody manipulated him the entire time, and she was impossible to work with. And he wrote a book about it after the fact, and now Kirk Nurmi has too been disbarred because of his tell-all book.
Oh, man. What's his book called, do you know?
I do not know, and I didn't look, and I'm sorry, I will look later.
No, it's okay, I can look too.
He also got cancer during the course of the trial.
Oh, no!
He said he believed it was his body's response to all the stress he went through defending Jody Arias.
I mean, he might not be wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Jody Arias is serving a life sentence in Perryville State Women's Prison in Goodyear, Arizona, according to the Arizona Department of Corrections. So she last worked as a library aide in prison. She also, at one point, I believe during the trial, but I don't really remember, she donated her hair to Locks of Love. Could you fucking imagine?
Oh my God.
She
what have
also,
you got? Yeah, what have you got Jody Arias's hair?
She also has an art website online. I accidentally stumbled upon it.
Oh,
I won't be visiting it again, but yeah. I was very confused. Also, she at one point made a shirt during trial that said Survivor. And she wanted to sell them to other domestic abuse survivors. But could you fucking imagine?
She's the abuser. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that is the end of Jody Arias.
Well, I found the title of the book.
Oh, please.
It's Trapped with Miss Arias, part 1 of 3, from getting the file to being ready for trial.
Ooh!
I know, snappy title. It's funny, because it says part 1 of 3, but then it says book 1 of 1. Oh, I see. There are 2 other parts. I see.
Well, yeah, so it makes sense to me, but I guess I didn't realize that if you write a tell-all book about someone you defended, you can get disbarred.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean,
I don't know if that's a state-to-state thing. It probably isn't.
Yeah.
Because there's attorney-client privilege, and it'd be breaking attorney-client privilege.
Yeah, but if they're no longer your client, why can't you write a tell-all?
Because the privilege extends to everything that you learned during the time that you had the privilege conversations.
Well, that's stupid. I want to read the book, but at
Parts
the same time...
Parts 2 and 3 are in one book.
Oh.
The first part had that snappy title, right?
Mm-hmm. What's the second part? /third part?
The second part is... So it's Trapped with Miss Arias, Parts 2 and 3, My Final Words. Much less snappy.
Oh, Kirk, you gave up.
Come on, Kirk Nurmi.
Kirk Nurmi. So what are your final thoughts? My
Gosh,
dear sister.
This case.
She's a piece of shit.
Yeah, I think the thing that stuck out with me the most in this telling, I didn't know most of those details, was how shitty it is that she was able to just drag his name through the mud over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no wonder they had these tearful victim impact statements at the end, because she has this national news platform all of a sudden that she can say things like he was attracted to little boys and he was abusive and he was like raping her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just so shitty.
It's awful. Like, she truly is a piece of shit.
Yeah. And like the thing I hate most about Jody, and it's probably partly because the genders are swapped from normal, is that I don't think very many people know Travis's name.
Probably not.
They know her name.
I think I'm pretty sure when you Google Travis Alexander, the first thing is Jody's Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And like, that's pretty shitty.
That's super shitty.
So
there have been a couple people that I've researched that when you Google that, the victim's name, the murderer comes up, and I don't like that.
No, and I think that that's what happens when you end up in these high profile cases. And I think she kind of hit, I don't like this term, but like kind of a sweet spot in media where it was prior to the huge movement to stop platforming criminals and mm-hmm. people who are committing really egregious acts, specifically mm-hmm. when it comes to like mass shooters and school shooters, but all this other stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like they kept giving her this platform. And we talked about it with Joran too. Mm-hmm. It was around the same time.
Yep.
Where like he continually got interviewed on mm-hmm. news programs.
Yep.
Why?
Yep.
He's never going to tell you the truth.
No.
So why? And I feel the same way about Jody.
Yeah, absolutely. It's weird because I knew I wanted to cover this, but it feels a little weird coming off of everything we've talked about in March, because I kind of wanted to name this the murder of Travis Alexander.
Oh, fair.
But Jody Arias is on a list. So yes. To go back to our platform, I thought we have to cover someone that's on the list. But yeah. I just want to acknowledge the fact that we know what we've talked about and what we've discussed, and she's on the list. That's the reason why.
Yeah. It is a little bit of a weird transition to go from like our Black History Month and Women's Month series,
mm-hmm.
like two sets of series, and then go back to our normal programming where we're kind of platforming criminals again.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think we do the best we can at really making it mm-hmm. about the victims as much as possible and mm-hmm. how shitty these people are.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a weird transition back, and to have it be Jody is a little tough. You tackle the tough one.
I maybe should have put a break in between, but it is okay. We'll never talk about her again.
Please no.
Yeah. But yeah, Travis was absolutely robbed of a real life.
Yes. And any possibility of like having peace in death.
Yes.
Because of the way that she has been speaking about him since he died.
And like, I truly believe what fucking Juan Martinez said is that it really was because he said, I'm not taking you on this trip. I'm done with you.
Yes.
That's what happened. She didn't snap.
No.
She knew exactly what she was doing. She went there to do this.
And it's really interesting too. Like, it's the gender swap of Laura McCluskey in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one in that story ever, I mean, he didn't live for a trial, which mm-hmm. makes a difference too. But like, no one would ever say that he snapped. He mm-hmm. didn't snap.
No.
He was stalking her. Jody was stalking Travis. But because of the gender swap, I think people have a harder time seeing it for what it is sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I have sources.
Okay.
So, first is Snapped, Jody Arias Part 1 and Jody Arias Part 2, which is Season 11, Episode 9 and 10. I only watched I only watched the first part, but I had every intention to watch both, so I'm sort of citing both.
Yep.
Dateline, Obsession, the Jody Arias story, hosted by Josh Mankiewicz.
Oh, Josh Mankiewicz.
ABC News, friends say they warned Travis Alexander that Jody Arias was dangerous for months before she killed him. She was convicted in June 2008 murder. She was convicted in his June 2008 murder and sentenced to life in prison.
That's all a headline?
It's like the headline and then the subline.
Oh, okay.
And that's by Gail Deutsch, Denise Martinez Raimundo, Jonathan Balthazar, and and Holy Francis.
Holly?
E-N-J-O-L-I. In Jolly?
Oh.
In Holy?
Oh, I don't know. Okay.
Sorry. ABC News, investigator. Wow. ABC News investigator in Jody Arias' case recalls her bizarre behavior in the interrogation room. Inside Edition, what these infamous women said during their prison interviews with Inside Edition. Inside Edition again, how an Inside Edition interview became a key to prosecuting Jody Arias. Investigation Discovery, 5 essential things you need to know about the horrific Jody Arias case. Jody Arias was sentenced to life in prison without parole, but she does have a chance for a new trial, by Mike McPadden. People, where is Jody Arias now? All about Travis Alexander's lover turned killer, now a prison library aide. By Skylar Caruso and Wendy Grossman Cantor.
People, come on.
they're so long. It's like, oh my God, just fucking get to the point.
I know, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Inside the murder of Travis Alexander, the man who was slaughtered by his jealous ex, Jody Arias, by Kalina Fraga. All that's interesting, the gruesome case of Jody Arias, who stabbed her ex-boyfriend 27 times and cut his throat from ear to ear, by Kalina Fraga.
Jeez.
Biography.com, Jody Arias. Mm-hmm. AZ Central, Jody Arias murder case, 20 top courtroom moments from the
20?
Apparently. The Republic, so AZ Central. There was no...
byline?
I was going to say name specific for this.
Yeah.
Former Maricopa County Prosecutor Juan Martinez disbarred, by Lauren Castle. NBC News, Jody Arias' 18 days on the witness stand could save her life. Experts, Tracy Connor, staff writer for NBC News. Also, I listened to Let's Go to Court podcast, episode 200, Jody Arias and the Duke Lacrosse Team, and episode 201, Jody Arias Part 2, and Clarence Elkins, and Wikipedia.
Nice.
Oh. That felt like its own fucking thing.
A lot of sources.
She's a piece of shit.
Yeah, she's a piece of shit. Absolutely.
Well, Sissy, thank you so much for sticking this out for me. I will never do a two-parter ever again. It was so long.
You did a great job, though. This was so good.
Oh, she's so long. Okay. Fuck Jody Arias.
Yep.
Rest in peace, Travis Alexander.
Yep.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find us on Instagram at A Most Wanted Podcast, where we post some true crime trivia every Sunday. You can follow us on X, or formerly known as Twitter, at A Most Wanted Pod. Find us and like us on Facebook at A Most Wanted Podcast. You can send us an email at amostwantedpodcast@gmail.com. And please remember to visit our website at A Most Wanted Podcast. And remember, please listen, subscribe, and love. Bye.